Welcome to Global Talk, an international affairs podcast from The National. I'm Justin Vella. On the line is Tamer Khan, the newspaper's correspondent in the United States. So Tamer, you were just in Washington at an event where the UAE ambassador to the United States, Yusuf Al-Taiba, called for regional governments to get serious about stopping money reaching extremists. Which countries in particular was he speaking about?
Well, the ambassador himself didn't directly name countries, but he was referring to the U.S. Treasury Department announced kind of designations of 12, I believe, more foreign terrorist fundraisers. And a number of those people were kind of either in Syria or based in Kuwait or working in Kuwait and Qatar to raise funds primarily for Syria's Al-Qaeda affiliate and also for ISIL.
And why do you think this is such a big issue for the UAE? The ambassador himself chose to speak out about this issue. Why was he highlighting it?
Well, I think it's something that the Gulf countries, kind of as the coalition against ISIS, ISIL, led by the U.S., gather steam, and as they, you know, try to figure out more ways apart from the military side to combat the group, the Gulf countries have kind of decided that, you know, the funding issue is a component that they're uniquely, of course, placed to tackle. But it's also, you know, the UAE kind of after 9/11, you know, UAE or officials, I think, would say that they were pretty open about opening their books to the U.S. in terms of, you know, private charity fundraising and private fundraising by citizens and that sort of thing. And other countries such as Qatar and Kuwait have had much less successful track records, so to speak, on the private funding issue. So I would say for kind of foreign policy and domestic politics reasons, both Kuwait and Qatar have done less than other countries in the Gulf to stem and stop private funding for militant groups, for extremist groups. And that's something, you know, both of these countries are very close allies of the U.S. Qatar in particular is very important for the U.S. posture in the Gulf. They have a huge base there that's kind of irreplaceable. There's intelligence coordination. Qatar, by virtue of its foreign policy, has, you know, closer relations than any other U.S. ally with Islamist groups, both political and some militant groups. And so it's been useful kind of in that regard as well. And I think before the ISIL issue came to the forefront of global concerns, the U.S., you know, I think at least publicly didn't pressure these countries as much to take on the private fundraising aspect or to do more about that. They were kind of, you know, they would make statements or I'm sure, you know, behind closed doors were pushing for certain things. But I think that this issue now becoming such a threat to the region has changed their calculations a bit. And we see a little bit more public pressure by the U.S. on Qatar and Kuwait to do more.
You were also recently at the UN General Assembly, where everyone seemed pretty much focused on figuring out how to fight ISIL. In some way, can we say that it's a win for the international community that so many countries have agreed on the need to fight this group?
Yeah, I mean, I think at one level, it's a good thing, obviously, that all of these countries in the Middle East and Europe and really around the world have said that they will kind of cooperate. And of course, there was a Security Council resolution that will force them to do more on the foreign fighter issue. And of course, for the U.S., it's very important kind of politically to have, especially an Arab component to this coalition, to kind of show, you know, a wary and war-weary American public that it's not just the U.S. going alone again in the Middle East. But I think when you kind of get, you know, focus a little bit more closely or on the issue, I think it becomes kind of some divisions emerge, and it's not so clear that everyone is on the same page.
How so? What do you mean in terms of not being on the same page? Do you think that different countries have different priorities in terms of fighting ISIL? Does the U.S. have a different set of priorities from its Arab allies?
Yes, I think that's definitely the case. So, you know, the U.S. kind of their strategy so far has been to contain ISIL, to work with the Iraqi government and also the Kurdish forces to, you know, coordinate with them in the fight there. But then in Syria, I mean, there's not, it's not really clear what beyond the airstrikes, at least in the short term, the U.S. is kind of going to do. There's not a focus on, and this is where the disagreements with the Arab partners come into play. There's not a focus or really any aspect of using the intervention there to address the Assad regime's continued bombardment of civilian areas. Well, there's nothing in the strategy so far that would necessarily help the rebels fighting the regime, which Arab countries, of course, say is the root cause of the extremist threat emanating from Syria. And I think, you know, from discussions I've had, Arab countries have signed on, of course, because ISIL is an immediate threat to them and they have a stake in this, but also because they might see it as the kind of last chance for them to influence U.S. policy in Syria. If they didn't, you know, provide military support, it might give the U.S. an excuse, you know, kind of not to listen to them at all. And I thought that, and they might have thought that being so publicly involved and militarily involved in a qualitative way would help them perhaps change U.S. calculations or influence U.S. calculations. But it's not clear that that will necessarily be the case. There's a fear on the from the Arab perspective that if the U.S. doesn't address the issue of the regime and trying to do more to bolster rebels to kind of bring about a political transition, you know, that their involvement in the coalition, I mean, publicly it will probably remain, but it might in practice, you know, scale back, or they might become less interested in this strategy, especially if they're seen as supporting, you know, carrying out airstrikes that are playing into the or benefiting the regime against the rebels, or allowing them the regime to kind of focus on the rebels while on the more moderate rebels while the U.S. and its partners take care of ISIL, which was kind of the most powerful group in Syria.
At the UN, you also saw Sheikh Abdullah, the UAE's foreign minister, speak. What did he decide to focus on?
During the foreign minister's speech at the General Assembly, he kind of focused on the UAE's being out front in the fight against extremism. But he, you know, from the UAE position, they really don't want that fight to be limited to ISIL. They view it as a regional undertaking, and that's not just military, but has other, you know, aspects, ideological. And it's a way for them, it's a way for the UAE to kind of present itself as partner par excellence for the West and for the world, kind of in this post-Arab Spring era where violence and extremism is kind of metastasized, where there's heightened political polarization, and to kind of draw attention, I think part of the intent was to draw attention to the connections from the UAE's perspective between violent extremism, such as Al-Qaeda and ISIL, and Islamism more broadly. And I think that's something, you know, there's an opportunity for the UAE to kind of make that argument in the current context.
Can we say that this is a new era for Gulf governments in terms of self-defense?
I mean, I think it's too early. I mean, certainly it's unprecedented, the kind of military roles that the Gulf governments are playing in Syria in such a kind of robust way and elsewhere in the region. And I think it's, I think everyone agrees that it's important development, but it's not, you know, the direct implications or what the implications will be is not quite so clear. Of course, it kind of comes in the context of enduring deep concerns in Gulf capitals about this administration's, the Obama administration's commitment to its traditional stance in the region. You know, whether I think there's probably disagreement on the basis for some of those deep fears. But I think it's undeniable that, you know, when you talk to Gulf officials, what repeatedly comes up is President Obama's decision not to carry out airstrikes against the Assad regime after its use of chemical weapons, even though the president drew a red line and had given private assurances to officials in the region, you know, that the strikes were going to be carried out. And so I think that moment, coupled with, you know, the kind of public messaging about pivoting to Asia, you know, you had the National Security Advisor Susan Rice talk about that pretty explicit term, saying the U.S. didn't want to be bogged down 24/7 in the Middle East. And then also the negotiations with Iran over its nuclear program. I think that has led to real fears in the Gulf and more broadly in the region about the kind of drastic changes that could be on the cards in terms of the geopolitical status quo in the region, with the U.S., you know, perhaps hoping to leave some kind of balance of power in the region that would allow it to scale back and focus on its kind of more core interests in Asia. And I think in that context, this, you know, the UAE in particular being more assertive in protecting it, what it sees as its national interests in the region without, you know, coordinating with the U.S. or with coordinating with the U.S. I think that's kind of, it does mark a different era. I don't know. I mean, I think the U.S. for, you know, will still remain kind of the predominant, you know, guarantor of security, as people say, in the region. And I mean, I don't think it's, especially given what's going on, it's not going to change its stance anytime soon. But I think that there are changes taking place. This administration has called for Arab countries, for Gulf countries to do more of the heavy lifting, to take on more responsibility for security in the region. And so I think that, you know, they are probably happy to see Gulf countries more willing to put skin in the game, so to speak. But at the same time, I'm not sure how happy they would be if that, you know, kind of unilateral action clashes with what the U.S. sees as its interests. So there is, you know, it's definitely the, I think, the beginning of a different kind of more unpredictable era.
You've been listening to an interview with Tamer Khan. To read more of his reporting, visit thenational.ae and follow the newspaper's foreign coverage on Twitter by the handle @thenationalrome.